Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with John Wells. Well, if you're just tuning in to KPCW this morning, of course, there are a lot of questions out there and a lot of curiosity about the structure of this stay-at-home order that will be taking place as of midnight tonight, or 12:01 a.m. tomorrow morning, to be exact. And here's kind of a nice summary. Everyone is to stay at home in their residences and avoid travel, but can participate in essential activities, and those would be medical appointments, obtain necessary services and supplies, delivering necessary services and supplies to others, shopping for food, medicine, and household supplies, picking up material for working at home, and caring for family members or pets, exercising outside, we can all do, walking, hiking, running, and accessing essential government functions. Also, essential travel, doing the essential activities, going to work at essential businesses is allowed. When outside, however, do not congregate in groups and maintain social distancing. All businesses which have a centralized facility where employees congregate or customers come in the county are to close that facility to normal operations. Now, businesses may, of course, remain open to teleworking, working from home, and businesses are allowed to continue minimum basic operations on the site of the facility, which include the minimum necessary activities to maintain the value of the business's inventory, ensure security, process payroll and employee benefits, or for related functions which allow their workforce to continue to work remotely. In other words, a skeleton staff, no customers or clients. And there are some categories of businesses that are exempt, and those would be essential government functions, essential infrastructure, and essential businesses. And of course, all of those are strongly encouraged to work through the pandemic at their facilities, fully staffed and open for business, and cautioned to use social distancing. And there are a lot more. You can go to summitcounty.org, Summit County Health Department, and parkcity.org also has the updates from the county, but this order came from the Summit County Council last night, and as I said before, that will go into effect at midnight tonight. So let's go to one quick break. Oh, you had something.
Well, I wanted to ask you, because it's sort of a curious sentence that I read last night, that visitors, people that do not belong to Summit County, but who may be visiting us, that they're asking them to leave the county quickly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, by April 1st. And
by April 1st.
Yeah. And basically, because we have so many visitors in the town, it's probably the reason that we've had such a high incidence of confirmed cases, you know, a big higher per capita number than most other counties. In fact, we're about fifth in the nation. And so part of that is that we have a lot of visitors from all over the globe in town. And so those visitors are being asked to vacate, go home. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this with Earl Foote, Nexus IT.
Hey, this is Firefall. I'm Mark Andes.
Gary Jones.
And Jock Bartley.
And when we're in Park City, we listen to
KPCW.
I especially dig Fresh Track Friday. Maybe you'll hear some Firefall on there.
Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with John Wells. We were earlier speaking with Michael Vershin, assistant professor of the Department of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Utah. We spoke with Michael about the National Science Foundation Rapid Response Research Grant to study the structure of the coronavirus strain at the center of the pandemic. Our next guest is Earl Foote. He's the CEO for Nexus IT Consultants. Foote's company is an IT support and computer services company based here in Park City, providing rapid response IT services in Salt Lake City and across northern Utah. Earl joins us to talk about the best-in-class tools and services that employers and employees can use to work, attend class, and conference from home. Earl, welcome back to Cool Science Radio.
Hey, good morning, Lynn and John. Thank you so much for having me on, and good morning to your
your listeners. I hope everybody is healthy and happy, hunkering down at home.
Yes, well, thank you for that. We here in the live studio, it smells like one big pool of disinfectant. It's not pleasant, but it gives us this certain feeling of security and safety.
Security.
Yeah. Well, we want to disclose as well that you've been a longtime underwriter of this program, Cool Science Radio. And so thank you for that. And thanks for coming back on the show. I'm sure that you have been really busy in the last couple of weeks setting up people to work remotely.
You know, we have. And certainly, this reality became more real, I guess, for those of us here in Summit County yesterday afternoon, as we found out that the county has issued a shelter-in-place order and asked us all to do our part to keep this virus from spreading while staying home. And certainly, over the last few weeks, there's been a lot of businesses that have been transitioning to a remote workforce or work from home type of scenario, and now more are being forced to do that. We've seen that there's been a lot of challenges for organizations as they make that transition. Not only technological, which we're, of course, helping them navigate through, and we want to talk more about some of the intricacies there, but we're seeing a lot of organizations having challenges with the culture of having 100% remote workforce and operational procedure and things, and, you know, really kind of reinventing completely an organization, because most of us never really thought that this sort of scenario would crop up and happen to us.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I know even here at KPCW for many years we've talked about how great it would be to be able to even produce news stories remotely and work remotely, and it never quite became a reality. And so we're being forced into that, you know, trial by fire. And, you know, a lot of us a couple weeks ago had no idea what a VPN meant. So, yeah. You know, and so what are the biggest challenges that you're seeing out there?
Yeah, very good. So I think, first of all, most organizations right now are trying to drink water through a fire hose. You know, it's just the amount of stuff that we're dealing with, and particularly when it comes to the technology side, you know, is a little daunting. And it's not just us, but suddenly, worldwide, we are placing this massive load on all the tools that are meant to help organizations work remote. Collaboration tools, video conferencing, you know, like Zoom and GoToMeeting and that type of stuff, and Teams and, you know, Microsoft Office and all these different tools that are meant to help organizations in this scenario. Even those, as well as internet service providers, you know, weren't necessarily ready for this. Suddenly you've got millions of people being sent home during the day and utilizing internet connections and technologies that really weren't ready. And so those earlier days, starting a couple of weeks ago, there were a lot of hiccups with a lot of those platforms, and you know, they were down or they were extremely sluggish. They have been, you know, adapting on the fly, and those things seem to be stabilizing. But some of the first challenges that organizations are dealing with first of all, you send people home, and you don't know what type of internet connectivity they have at their house. It might be great, and it might be horrible, right? It might not be adequate for them to be able to use and access the tools that you need to access to be productive while they're working at home. So a lot of organizations are trying to navigate and figure out, how do we get new and better bandwidth and more reliable bandwidth in the homes of our team members? They're trying to figure out how they collaborate over their phone system. Those who haven't been on, you know, more modern what are called IP phone systems, you know, are scrambling to try to figure out, how do we keep our phones alive? How do we keep phones ringing, you know, now that we have people throughout different locations all over, you know, the town or the state or the country. And so the phone system is a massive consideration that organizations are dealing with. Another one of the big things, too, is suddenly you have people going home and using whatever device they may have at home to access corporate data, sensitive corporate data. And that device might be the iPad that the kids use, or it might be the family computer that everybody uses. It may not be in the best conditions. It may not perform well enough. But the other, major component here that a lot of organizations don't necessarily realize just yet is that it's a massive risk to their organization, because if you've got other people utilizing these devices that your team members are now using to access your corporate data, particularly kids are really good at getting infections on computers and getting computers compromised by browsing the web and, playing games and things. And so they can expose your organization to a vulnerability if they get an infection that can spread to your corporate network or open a back door that a hacker can use to get in. And so organizations have to now be thinking about what devices are people using at home. And if they have to be compliant with some sort of government regulation like HIPAA or PCI or SOC or SOX or what, there's dozens of them, right? For the most part, they have to be able to have some administrative control over that device, and they have to be able to ensure that it has adequate endpoint security. And so you have to start thinking about now, okay, I need anti-malware, antivirus on that computer, and I need to be able to control what can and cannot be done so that we mitigate our risk as an organization. I know I've been pontificating a lot here, but those are a few of the preliminary items that companies are starting to deal with, and that we're helping organizations navigate. And we're here as an organization to not be profiteers. Look, this is a rough time that we're all going through. We realize that economically this is really tough, and so we're doing our part. And in fact, we've worked with a lot of our partners that are manufacturers of these types of remote work tools, to be able to offer them, at greatly reduced rates, or even sometimes a free trial or a free period where organizations can use them right now while they're going home. There's certainly other considerations we can talk about, guys, but what other questions do you have?
Well, I guess what you're saying, Earl, is from the perspective of the employer, or let's say the university, or from the vendor, and then from the perspective of the employee or the student or the customer, there needs to be a plan in place to address. There are a number of moving pieces here that you just described.
Yeah, and that's really, I'm just kind of scratching the surface, to be honest, and you're right here, John. So most organizations haven't been serious about really putting a business continuity plan into place to really sit down with leadership and executive teams and discuss, okay, if the worst of worst were to come, to happen, if we had a massive natural disaster or we have a pandemic, which we currently do, right? How do we keep this business operational? What are all the considerations in place? And not just from a technology perspective, but what are the operational considerations we need to be considering? What do we need to consider for team member engagement and culture and healthcare? And, there's tons of considerations. But definitely when it comes to the technology side, this stuff can be very intricate. And so it's where organizations don't have a technology expert in their leadership team, that's where we can step in and take a role with an organization and help them understand what are all of those moving pieces, what are all the considerations, how do you deal with security and compliance when suddenly you have this workforce is completely spread out, and how do you continue to be productive, right? It's a very delicate balancing act right now.
I just want to mention to our customers, if you go to nexusit.net, under the Media Center button, there are 45, 46, maybe 47 videos right there on cybersecurity, on managed services, on how to keep your IT running, on hacking the hacker, Nexus IT versus the CIO. So there's a lot of information there that Earl and his folks have put together. Earl, I wanted to touch on something that you had mentioned earlier, and that's about the Wi-Fi signal and those sorts of things. A couple years ago, I was in Sweden, and I was several cities. One city had about 10,000 people in it. Another city had about 100,000 people, and another city had about 600,000 people. And they had a nationwide program. They had nationalized the Wi-Fi signal, and they had put it into all of their tax plans for a couple bucks a month. That's all it cost them. And the performance at the 10,000 population town all the way up to the 600,000 city was, it was high performance, it was very reliable, it was available, it was also had error correction and all those sorts of things and security. We have pockets in the United States, especially in some rural areas, where Wi-Fi isn't available, and then we have people that, you know, make decisions on it's more important to get eggs and food in the house versus pay for the Wi-Fi connection because they have finite dollars. Do you think that we are moving as a country towards a more nationalized Wi-Fi service? Do you think that that's something that we could pull off?
I probably don't, and I think we're too used to being a capitalistic society here in the United States, and you know, internet services are a privatized segment of our economy. And you're right. I mean, as I travel, and I love to travel, and particularly I love to get to off the beaten path, kind of obscure places. And as I visit sometimes countries that we consider developing countries who have fiber connections, I'm not just talking, you know, like reliable wireless internet connections, but fiber connections to the home, to almost every home, right? Even in rural areas, right? Sometimes it's very surprising to see how far behind we are. In fact, I saw a study a few months ago that placed us like at number 46, maybe, if I remember correctly, in the world in terms of the availability of high speed bandwidth and the quality of it throughout our country. So we're honestly, and particularly in rural areas, you know, a lot of us here in Summit County, the only options we do have is some sort of wireless internet connection, and sometimes it's not the best. Even some of us only have a satellite connection available, and that's even worse. And so while I think it there's potentially an argument, and of course there, you know, you get into politics of socialism versus capitalism and everything else when you start to get into those conversations, but there's an argument for, should the government get involved in making sure that bandwidth is available, you know, high speed quality bandwidth is available, particularly in rural areas.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about this a lot in the last two, well, I guess it's only been a week now that school has been out, but making sure that those households have access to Wi-Fi. And maybe you can give us an overview of the free services and what the potential is and the capability for someone who normally has not been able to afford Wi-Fi, and I'm talking now anywhere in Summit County, what they might do, and Wasatch County as well. Because I don't know, like, where they're... I talked to someone who lives in Peoria yesterday and doesn't have Wi-Fi, and I don't know if it's a question of access or a question of money, but maybe you could give us an overview.
Yeah, and that's... potentially a slightly complex question, but I will do my best to digest it, just because there's, I think we're attaching the term Wi-Fi to something that maybe isn't Wi-Fi. Before I go there, I should mention, based upon that last little conversation, that I do see that the government does have grants available to rural telecom and rural, you know, internet companies so that they can provide better bandwidth. And so there is some, you know, the government is involved to some extent. I know that, for example, some of our small hometown internet service providers, you know, here in Summit County do apply for and receive some of those grants. But to back up to your question here, Lynn, so I think we need to make a distinction here. Wi-Fi and your internet service are not necessarily synonymous things. You have generally an internet connection, and most of us probably have a hardwired internet connection. It's a fiber cable, it's a coax cable, it's a copper cable that comes into our homes and plugs into some sort of distribution device, generally a gateway, a router, a firewall, and, you know, distributes internet throughout our home. Those gateway devices, you know, can have wireless, you know, a wireless access point built into them, which then distributes Wi-Fi throughout the home. And sometimes, you know, bigger homes and bigger offices, of course, you need multiple or sometimes many, many access points to distribute Wi-Fi throughout the entire premise. Not to complicate this further, but the internet connection available to many of us, particularly in more rural areas, is a wireless internet connection. It's not necessarily referred to as Wi-Fi, although it is a Wi-Fi signal, whether that be, through now what is most commonly used, a 5 gigahertz wireless signal that is used to deliver wireless internet to homes, or, as I mentioned, there's satellite as well. But the Wi-Fi itself is generally, it's a device or a set of devices within your home that are providing a wireless signal for your devices to connect to via a wireless connection. A lot of internet service providers now, so if you go and sign up with Comcast and get a coax internet connection or a fiber internet connection into your home, they have a gateway device that you can lease from them, usually around $5 a month. And more often than not now, those actually have Wi-Fi signal in them. If you don't have a very big home, it's adequate, you know, maybe to cover a couple hundred or a couple thousand square feet of space. So you asked about how do people look at economical solutions. I know that most all providers, most, you know, technological services right now are trying to help people. And so they have, you know, if you're signing up for new accounts, they have introductory offers where they're offering 1 or 3 months free. They're trying to escalate installation times to a few days. Their packages, you know, they have reduced cost packages, particularly for the next 12 to 24 months. And even if you already have an internet service provider, most are willing right now to help because of the financial burden that's being placed on most of our businesses and homes. Most are willing to renegotiate your contract right now. So I would, and not just with your internet service, you know, with whatever financial obligations you have at home, if you and your family are being impacted economically with the current situation, you know, call up your providers and find out if you can, you know, if they have some sort of crisis relief offer, and you can renegotiate your packages that you have.
Yeah, that's a good tip. Well, shifting into something a little bit more maybe fun, we've all been doing a lot of video conferencing and conference calls and things like that with a variety of reliability. I've been on free conference call where the call is really good for about 15 minutes and then it just sort of starts to deteriorate to the point where you just have to hang up. And then Zoom conferencing has been used a lot. And then a lot of us are saying, you know, for example, it's my girlfriend's birthday and we decided to do a conference party virtual party at 5 o'clock. So for those people who just want to socialize with their family, what is your suggestion? I mean, I saw an Uber conference site, there's Google Chats, and like you said, GoToMeeting and all these other things, but what should we do? Briefly.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, and as I mentioned kind of earlier, you know, most of those tools are being taxed pretty hard, much harder than they were prior to 2 weeks ago. And so, but there's a lot of variables there. Whether it's reliable or not can depend upon, you know, the Wi-Fi signal in somebody's home, their wired internet connection, and the quality of that. It can depend upon the service provider itself. And so there's a lot of variables there. But, to address your question and talking about how do you stay in touch with your family and friends, I would probably look more at the consumer-grade options that have been designed to deal with higher loads right now that are kind of built into your devices. So if you're an iOS, an Apple device user, use FaceTime. If you're an Android user, there's lots of different options. There's Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp, or you can directly from a phone call click the video button and do a video call from your Android device as well. So I would probably for the personal contact, I would stick to those consumer level. Of course, there's Google Hangouts as well, that people are using a lot of right now. And then as you're talking about your corporate video communications, then most definitely look more at Zoom and Teams and GoToMeeting and some of those other corporate grade options that are out there.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're speaking with Earl Foote. He's the CEO of Nexus IT Consultants. Foote's company is an IT support and computer services company based in Park City, and they provide services to Salt Lake City as well. Earl, Steve Jobs was a big believer in hard work. He was also a big believer, and he used to think about this all the time. How can I foster creativity in my organization? He knew that creativity was not a solitary endeavor, and that because of our humanness and we're social beings, he believed in accidental mingling, chance encounters, and that's why he designed Space Park. Looks like a big flying saucer with outer and inner rims where all the employees are bumping into each other all the time. So the tools you're talking about in this particular time when we can't be together having these chance encounters, these tools, if we use them, will help us to spark creativity. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and I think, John, there's a very important point here, and that is that while many of our industries and businesses are being significantly disrupted, as entrepreneurs and as teams, we have to now become extremely innovative. Many of us are going to have to pivot to survive. And so, by all means, begin to use these types of tools to collaborate with your team. I know as a solopreneur, I only have so many ideas, right? But when I can ping problems off of 20 different people,
absolutely,
the amount of ideas suddenly becomes the list becomes much, much longer. If you're an entrepreneur, or you're running a business, you're a leader, begin to think about one of the favorite models that I like. It's called design thinking. But there's a lot of different models out there for collaborating and innovating and thinking and coming up with ideas, as a team. Don't go it alone. Even if you are a solo entrepreneur like myself, you have teams and you probably have some leadership, whether that's formalized or not within your organization.
Yeah.
Tomorrow we have our leadership meeting and sit down with those people and ideate about how you're going to innovate and how you're going to pivot with the current market conditions.
Great. Hey, Earl, we've got to let you go. We thank you so much for joining us. It's Earl Foote, the founder and CEO of Nexus IT. You take care. Thanks for all the good work.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.